Now, it's September 22nd, and it's study night, and we're on session 3 of our study of diligently seeking God. And I had asked everyone to memorize Hebrews 11:6. So without looking at it, I would like everybody out loud on their own to recite Hebrews 11:6 from memory, okay? But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Hebrews 11:6. Okay? Very good. I'll assume everybody did it very well. My wife did a good job. And I would like to, this evening, read the context, just read it straight through, a little bit before and a little bit after chapter 11, just so we get down what it's talking about. Last time we did an overview and we read through chapter 10 together, but I'd like to read through the end of chapter 10, chapter 11, and the beginning of chapter 12, and I'd like to read that in the working translation from Journey Through the Acts and Epistles. By the way, I had asked everyone to read the introduction to the Epistle of the Hebrews in Journey Through the Acts and Epistles, and that is in Volume 2 if you have the hardbound books, okay? So if you have the books, make sure you go to Volume 2. That's the one that begins with Hebrews and it goes through Revelation. And before it has the working translation for Hebrews, it has a wonderful overview to help you understand what the book is all about. So that's what I would ask you to read. If you do not have the books, or if you do not have Volume 2, you can go to Daniel Bader's website, continuinginthescriptures.com, okay? And you can order the books from here, or you can download an ebook that has both volume 1 and 2 together. So you just go to ebooks, click on Journey Through the Acts and Epistles, volume 1 and 2. It'll give you more information. Cost is $45. Put it in your shopping cart and then you pay for it and then you can download it instantly. So that's something that you can do. I have that on my computer and it comes in really handy having it right here. I also have the books. But let's start in chapter 10, start in verse 35, just to give a running start on chapter 11, where we're going to focus. And we're going to read through without stopping to explain things, just so we can get the context here. Starting here in verse 35 says, "Therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. In fact, you have need of patience, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive in return the promise," the thing that was promised. "Besides, in a very little while, he who is coming will arrive and will not be late. The just will live by believing, and if anyone withdraws, my soul will not be pleased with him. We are not of those who withdraw unto destruction, but of those who believe unto the acquisition of the soul." Now, Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now, believing is the foundation or the title deed of matters hoped for, the proof of things not seen. In fact, by it, by believing, the elders received witness, or a good report from God. By believing, we understand that the ages have been fully prepared by the word of God, for that which is seen has not come into existence from things that are visible. By believing, Abel offered to God a greater sacrifice than Cain, by which he received witness, a good report from God, that he was just. God himself bore witness, a good report, by accepting his gift offerings, and by it he still speaks, although he is dead. By believing, Enoch was transferred, so that he would not see death, and he was not found because God had transferred him. In fact, before his transfer, he received witness, a good report from God, that he pleased God. Now, without believing, it is impossible to please God. For he who approaches God must believe that he is, that he exists, and that he becomes a rewarder to those who seek him. By believing, Noah, being instructed concerning things not yet seen, acted with reverence and built or prepared an ark for the salvation, the deliverance of his house, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the justness according to believing. By believing, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, obeyed and went out, not knowing where he was going. By believing, he sojourned as a stranger in the land of promise, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, joint heirs of the same promise. For he was waiting for the city having foundations, whose craftsman and designer builder is God. By his believing, Sarah herself also received the ability to conceive seed, even beyond childbearing age, because he, Abraham, considered him, God, faithful who had promised. Wherefore, from one, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as the stars of heaven in multitude, and as innumerable as the sand which is on the seashore. While believing, these all died, not having received the promises, or what was promised, but they saw and welcomed them at a distance, and they confessed that they were strangers and sojourners on the earth. Now, those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If indeed they were thinking of that homeland from which they had departed, then they would have had opportunity to return. As it was, they were longing for a better homeland, that is, a heavenly homeland. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. In fact, he has prepared a city for them. By believing, Abraham, when he was proved, offered Isaac. He who had received the promises offered his only begotten son of promise, regarding whom it was said, "In Isaac will your seed be called." He took into account that God was even able to raise him from the dead, by which he also in return received him in a parable or symbolic comparison. By believing, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By believing, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and bowed in worship as he leaned on the top of his staff. By believing, Joseph, when he came to an end, recalled the promise concerning the exodus of the sons of Israel, and he gave commandment concerning his bones. By believing, Moses, after being born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was an elegant child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By believing, Moses, having become great, refused to be called a son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to have a temporary enjoyment of sin. He considered the insult suffered for the coming Christ to be greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, because he looked to the reward. By believing, he left Egypt, not fearing the rage of the king. In fact, he persevered as though he saw him who is invisible. By believing, he kept the Passover and the applying of blood on the lintel and two side posts, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch them, the people of Israel. By believing, they passed through the Red Sea as through a dry land, which the Egyptians attempted to cross but were drowned. By believing, the walls of Jericho, after they had been encircled for 7 days, fell down. By believing, the harlot or innkeeper Rahab did not perish with those who were disobedient after she had received the spies with peace. What more should I say? For the time will fail me if I explain in detail about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through believing conquered kingdoms, carried out justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were empowered from weakness, became strong in battle, turned back the armies of the enemies. Women received their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured, not accepting the redemption, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others received a trial of mockings and of scourgings, and in addition of bonds and of imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were tempted, they died by the murder of the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. The world was not worthy of them. They roamed in deserts and mountains and caves and fissures of the earth. All of these who received witness, a good report from God, through the right way of believing, did not in return receive the promise, what was promised, because God planned something better for us to the end that without us they could not be perfected. Chapter 12. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses encompassing us, let us strip off every impediment and entangling sin and run with patience in the contest lying before us, looking with undivided attention to the leader down the path and perfecter of the right way of believing, namely Jesus, who, because of the joy lying before him, endured the cross, disregarding the shame, and sat down at the right side of the throne of God. By all means, attentively consider him who has endured such controversy from sinners against himself, so that you are not weary and exhausted in your souls. That's as far as I'm going to read, but that covers that whole section. And in the working translation, there are footnotes, and occasionally you'll see a footnote with three asterisks, and that will give a summary of the section of Scripture. And I'd just like to read this one that's a summary of Hebrews 10:32 through Hebrews 12:3. It says, throughout this epistle, the people of Israel were encouraged to believe God regarding his son Jesus Christ. They were told about the great salvation, and they were also encouraged to believe the gospel regarding the Christ and thereby enter into God's rest. The new and better covenant was made by God with the people of Israel and ratified by Jesus Christ. They needed to believe God regarding what he had done in that covenant. In Hebrews 11, they were emphatically encouraged to believe God. Jesus Christ declared, according to John 20, verse 29, "Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed." The great cloud of witnesses spoken of in chapter 11 looked forward to the Christ and what he was to accomplish. They believed God with regard to things that they had not yet seen, and they were convinced of their hope because it rested on correct and accurate information from God. The people to whom this epistle was addressed needed to look with undivided attention to Jesus, the leader down the path and perfecter of the right way of believing. Okay? So, having that context, I'd like to take a closer look at some of these things in Hebrews 11. We looked at Abel and Enoch very briefly last time we were together, but I'd like to look in more depth and see what we can learn about these two men who got a good report. We want to see some of the things that they had in common with each other. And what it says about them diligently seeking God, which is the whole point of our study here. What did they do to diligently seek God? So, let's read the first few verses here from the King James. Verse 1 says, "Now faith, or believing, is the substance, the title deed, of things hoped for, expected, looking forward to, the evidence of things not seen. For by it, by faith, by believing, the elders obtained a good report." And we're going to look at two of them that obtained a good report. "Through faith, believing, we understand that the worlds or ages were framed, prepared by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear, that are now visible." Now verse 4. "By faith, by believing, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it, by faith, he being dead yet speaketh." So, what do we know about Abel? We're going to go to Genesis chapter 4 where it talks about him, but on the way, there's a couple of places where he's mentioned in the Gospels by Jesus Christ. One of them being in Matthew 23. So let's go to Matthew 23, starting in verse 34. This is when Jesus Christ was railing at the Pharisees and scribes. He was really reproving them publicly, letting them have it. Well, let's start in verse 29, actually, to see what he's saying about them. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous ones, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore, ye be witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers. How can ye escape the damnation of hell? And that's the Gehenna, not the Sheol, where the state of death, but like the lake of fire. Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them shall ye scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Barachias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. So in reproving them, he mentions Abel as the first one to be righteous and to have his blood shed by another. The first one who was righteous before God, but killed or murdered by another person. Okay. In Luke 11, similar but not identical situation. We'll start in verse 50, but he is talking to the lawyers here. We'll start in verse 47 this time. Get a little running start. Talking to the lawyers. Woe unto you, for you build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Truly ye bear witness that ye allow the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and ye build their sepulchres. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute, that the blood of all the prophets, which was shed from the foundation of the world, may be required of this generation, from the blood of Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, which perished between the altar and the temple. Verily I say unto you, it shall be required of this generation. So in Matthew we saw that Abel was a righteous man whose blood was shed. This one says he was a prophet. So Abel was a prophet. I would say the first prophet. The first of all the prophets. And of course, he was the first one to be killed. He was the first prophet and the first victim of murder. So we know this about Abel. Now let's go to Genesis chapter 4. He was a righteous man. He was a prophet. Being a righteous man, he believed words of God. Because the righteousness is by believing. And there had been a promise given regarding the seed of the woman that would crush the head of the serpent, right? Now, if he was a prophet himself, then he would have received revelation from God and spoken on God's behalf, right? Because that's what a prophet does. He speaks for God words that he'd received by revelation. Now, who would have there been to speak to? Well, there would be his dad and mom, Adam and Eve. There would have been his brother Cain, and he might have had other brothers and sisters at that point that he spoke for God, because Adam and Eve had other sons and daughters besides Cain and Abel, and later on Seth. But in Genesis 4, verse 1, it says, and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived, and bare Cain, and said, I've gotten a man from the Lord, perhaps thinking this would be the one that would be crushing the head of the serpent. Turned out not to be that one. Verse 2, and she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. Remember, God had cursed the ground for Adam's sake, but there were also animals. So Abel chose to be a keeper of sheep, and Cain chose to be a tiller, like a plower of the ground. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground in offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. Now we read in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4, that it was by faith or by believing that Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain did. So being a prophet, he would have received words from God that he obeyed himself and that he also spoke, meaning Cain would have known how to bring an offering that was pleasing to God, right? Because his brother was a prophet. Now, whether he listened to his brother or not, that's a different story. Remember, Jesus Christ said a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. I mean, they're the first family alive upon the earth, so it would have been in his own house. And it seems that Cain was not as interested in doing the will of God as his brother was and didn't seem to have that great respect for his brother. We'll see that more when we keep reading. Verse 5, it says, "But unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell." Wroth means angry, okay? He was angry, and his countenance fell. "And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth?" So God spoke to him. "Why are you angry, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him." Now the word sin can mean sin as in missing the mark, or it can also mean a sin offering. That's one of the meanings of the Hebrew word that's translated sin. And if this translation is valid, then that would say God's giving him a way to make things right again, because there's a sin offering lying at the door or the entrance of the garden. You know, remember God set cherubim at the east side of the garden to guard the way of the tree of life. That would be very likely where they would have made this offering, where the cherubim were. But Cain wound up killing his brother. In verse 8, it says, "Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him." He murdered him. So Cain was the first murderer. Abel was the first murder victim. "And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper?" So he's talking to God very disrespectfully here and actually lying to him, because he knew where Abel was. He was the one that killed him, right? And he said, "I don't know." So he lied to God. And he said, "What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." You see that? So let's look at a few things here. So Abel, in verse 4, it says he brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof. So we don't have access to the words that God spoke to Abel, right? That conversation is not recorded. But what is recorded is what Abel did that was pleasing to God than what he did by believing. So what he did there, bringing the firstlings of his flock and the fat thereof, it means the first and the best, the firstborn of every female sheep, and the best ones for God are the ones that he brought. If he did that by believing, then that must have been what God told him to do, right? Offer the first and the best of the flock. And the Lord had respect unto Abel himself and to his offering. So it wasn't just that he had respect unto his offering, but he had respect unto Abel. Why? Abel was one that sought God's will, right? He sought after God's will. He was diligently seeking God, finding out, well, what's going to be pleasing to him, right? He found out what's pleasing to God. What would be pleasing for me to do for God? What would be pleasing for all of us to be doing for God? And God told him. I also know that being a prophet, the words that God would have spoken to him would have been in agreement to what God had already spoken, right? Because that's the way God works. There's going to be a cohesiveness. So it just makes sense that he would have told him some things about the coming promised seed. And offering the firstlings and the fatlings of the flock, well, when he would offer them, there would be the blood of these animals shed, which would have been a foreshadowing of the Messiah to come, the Christ to come, you see? So all these things go into it. Now, with Cain, it says that in process of time, it came to pass that he brought of the fruit of the ground, an offering unto the Lord. It doesn't say it was the first fruits, does it? It kind of indicates that it probably wasn't, because it was in process of time. It came to pass, like, oh yeah, should offer something to God, like my brother Abel's offering something to God, I'll offer something to God. But it doesn't say it was the first, and it doesn't say that it was the best, but it does say that concerning Abel's offerings, right? So the fact that it's not mentioned regarding Cain's offering, and it is mentioned regarding Abel's offering, shows that there's a difference there. And it says that God had respect to Abel himself and to his offering, but to Cain himself and to his offering, he had not respect. See, God looks at the heart of a person, and God doesn't accept an offering from someone whose heart is not right before him, right? We've seen that through the other scriptures. For someone to offer God an offering, it's got to be according to God's will and in the way that God says to do it. Abel did it according to God's will. We know that because he did it by believing. And God had respect unto Abel and to his offering. To Cain he did not. Now, I want to read something to you that I thought was interesting from the Brenton translation. The Brenton translation is translated from the Septuagint, which was the Greek translation from the Hebrew text. Okay, the word was originally given in Hebrew and written down in Hebrew. Around 300 years before Christ, there's a group of translators in Alexandria, Egypt, that translated the Hebrew Old Testament text, which was all they had at that time, into Greek so that other non-Hebrew speaking people could read it. Okay? Then Brenton is a man who did a translation from that Septuagint Greek translation into English so that English people can read it from what was translated from the Greek. Now, in verse 7 from the Septuagint in the Brenton translation, when God spoke to Cain and said, "Why is your countenance fallen?" Verse 7 says, "Hast thou not sinned if thou hast brought it rightly, but not rightly divided it? Be still, to thee shall be his submission, and thou shalt rule over him." So I just thought this is interesting, that if this is a valid translation, you know, from the Hebrew to the Greek to the English, that would indicate that it was fine for Cain to bring an offering from the fruit of the ground, but he had not rightly divided it, meaning he didn't do it in the way that God told him to do it. Now, we're not sure what the exact laws were before the law of Moses was given. We know that there were laws that were given by God to individuals. But under the law, it was not only okay, but expected for people to bring an offering to God from the firstlings of their flocks and the first fruits of the ground. So look at Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23. Again, I don't know if this is the same as it was back in the days of Cain and Abel, but at least under the law later on when it was written down, God did accept offerings from the fruit of the ground. Starting in verse 10 of Leviticus 23, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel." So this is God telling Moses what to say to the children of Israel. "Speak to the children of Israel, and thou shalt say to them, when ye shall enter into the land which I give you, and reap the harvest of it, then shall ye bring a sheaf, the first fruits of your harvest, to the priest. And he shall lift up the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow of the first day the priest shall lift it up. And ye shall offer on the day on which ye bring the sheaf a lamb without blemish of a year old for a whole burnt offering to the Lord." Okay, and he gives some other instructions. So according to the law of Moses, when they would bring the first thing that they would harvest from the crops. There's always one thing that gets ripe before all the others. They would bring that first ripe thing to the priest to hold it up before God, fruits offering. And along with that would be a lamb, okay? An animal, a lamb. And it would have to be a lamb without blemish, like Abel offered the first, and the fat thereof, the best ones for God. Look at Numbers chapter 18. I'm going to go back to the King James Version, though, here. Numbers 18, verse 12, it says, all the best of the oil and all the best of the wine and of the wheat, the first fruits of them which they shall offer unto the Lord, them have I given thee. So when they were to offer the first fruits and their offerings of the things that grew out of the ground, it was supposed to be the best of it. You see, the best of the oil, the best of the wine, the best of the wheat. And then under the law, those things would have been given to the Levites and the priests, you see. But that was the people's offering for God. It's supposed to be the first and the best concerning the crops of the field as well as the animals, right? Look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. It says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. So this has to do with the first fruits. And it could be the first fruits of the animals as well as the first fruits of the crops that grow, because the barns are going to be filled with plenty and the presses are going to burst out with new wine. You know, wine is from grapes that grow out of the ground, you see? So God does accept offerings of both animals and vegetation, wheat and grapes and olive oil and things like that. But it's supposed to be the first and the best. And there was supposed to be a lamb without blemish that was offered along with it. It was important to God that every offering would be without blemish. God didn't want people offering the sick, blind, and lame animals. Let me show you that in Exodus 29 and a few other verses. The quality of the offerings was important to God. It was supposed to be the first and the best all the way through. Exodus 29, verse 1. And there are many verses like this when it gives instructions on offerings of animals. And this is the thing that thou shalt do unto them to hallow them, to minister unto me in the priest's office. Take one young bullock and two rams without blemish. That means they were whole and entire, nothing missing, nothing broken. All the parts work. God didn't want offerings that would be the ones that people didn't want anyway. You know, it's like, here's my good sheep and here's the ones that are a little sickly. This one has a broken foot. This one is blind in one eye. I'll offer that one to God. God said, no, no, that's not accepted. Look at Deuteronomy 17, verse 1. Thou shalt not sacrifice unto the Lord thy God any bullock or sheep wherein is blemish or any ill-favoredness, for that is an abomination unto the Lord thy God. You see that? Also in Malachi. Look at Malachi chapter 1, last book of the Old Testament. And this is regarding the time when the people of Israel were allowed to return to Jerusalem, rebuild the temple. They did that, but they still had some problems. Malachi 1:6 says, a son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name. And ye say, wherein have we despised thy name? Ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar. And ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that you say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. Before the altar, there was a place where they would have the show bread. They had loaves of bread that were brushed with olive oil and set out before God. But like, if it's old and moldy and they still have it presented before God and it's polluted bread, God says, that's not acceptable to me. In verse 8, and if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person? Saith the Lord of hosts. Say, would you give this as a bribe to the governor for him to do favors to you? Would he accept that? But you treat me with less respect than you would a human being. Say, I'm God. I'm the one that does everything for you. I'm the one that takes care of you. Why are you doing this? Offering sick and blind and lame sacrifices. So even if it had the blood in it, if it was blind or lame or sick, it would still not be accepted of God. So in Cain's case, we don't know all the details. We just know that Abel offered the first and the fat, and he did it by believing. Cain, in process of time, brought an offering to God of the fruit of the ground, and it was not accepted. So there's something wrong with the offering itself, and there was something wrong with the person himself. Abel was one who diligently sought the will of God. Cain was one, apparently, who that was not his priority. He was not interested in the will of God. He just wanted to do what he wanted to do, and he wanted to be accepted and praised of God. It mentions Cain in 1 John chapter 3. So let's take a look at that before we start looking at Enoch. 1 John chapter 3, in verse 11 and 12. Says, for this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. So Cain was of that wicked one. He had gone the way that the devil had led him. He was the first murderer. Remember, Jesus Christ said that the devil was a murderer as well as a liar. Cain killed his brother, who was a righteous man, and then he lied about it before God. So between the two, who is seeking the will of God and who is diligently seeking God and believing what he said? Now let's look at Enoch. Hebrews 11, verse 5. There's not a whole lot written about Enoch, but he's mentioned here, and that's important. And he's mentioned in a couple other places. It says, by faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony or good report that he pleased God. Okay? So we're going to have to go to Genesis chapter 5, where he's mentioned, to see what it says about him there. Genesis chapter 5, verse 21. This is where it gives the genealogy from Adam through Enos all the way to Noah. Okay? So Enoch was the seventh generation, and it says in verse 21, Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Okay? So in Hebrews it says that he had this witness or good report that he pleased God. In King James it says he walked with God. So he walked, that's a figure of speech for conducting your life. And with God, he was near to God. He was together with God. So he conducted his life in a way that was pleasing to God. In fact, if we look at the Brenton translation, it says in this verse, and Enoch was well pleasing to God and was not found because God translated him. Okay? That's the way it reads in the Brenton translation from the Greek. And that agrees very much with what we read in the Epistle of the Hebrews. Now, there's another mention of Enoch in the Epistle of Jude, which is right before Revelation, second to last book of the Bible. So, book of Jude is only one chapter. And Jude is giving a warning to the church about ungodly people that had crept into the church and kind of infiltrated the church among the believers. Look at verse 11. It says, woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain. Look at that. That means the way of Cain, they're murderers and those that were against God. But in verse 14, it says, and Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches, which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. So Enoch prophesied. What did Enoch have in common with Abel? They were both prophets. Okay? Abel was called a prophet by Jesus Christ, and it says that Enoch prophesied. Prophecy was by revelation. Enoch would have received revelation from God and spoken on God's behalf concerning all these ungodly people. So in his day, the world, the inhabitants of the world, had become very ungodly, and Enoch prophesied of these people, okay, and of God coming with 10,000s of his saints, his sanctified ones, his holy ones. So he was a prophet, like Abel was. Being a prophet, he received information from God. So he would have been one that would have sought that, that was seeking God's will. And it says that he walked with God. He conducted his life according to the will of God. To conduct your life according to the will of God, you have to have words from God, right? That God gave him. These words would have been in agreement with other words that God had given. Something regarding the promised seed of the woman. But also he spoke about the ungodly ones, in contrast to the 10,000s of saints that the Lord would come with. And it says that he was translated, that he would not see death. And it's interesting, when you look at the phrase see death, it's only used a few times in the Bible. One of them is in Genesis 21. You'll turn with me there. 21 verse 16, this is regarding Hagar, which was Sarah, Abraham's wife's maidservant, who had a son named Ishmael, and they were evicted from the tent. And Hagar thought that Ishmael was going to die. And it says, and she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. For she said, let me not see the death of the child. She didn't want to see her son die. That would have been grievous to her. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. And then God heard her and sent an angel to show her a well so she could give her son some water. And he survived, and Ishmael did fine after that. But she didn't want to see the death of the child. There's another place in Psalms, Psalm 89, verse 48. 89:48. And in this psalm, it says in verse 48, what man is he that liveth and shall not see death? Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? Selah. Okay. So in this verse, to see death would be for the person himself to die, right? What man is he that liveth that shall not see death? Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? The other one is in Luke chapter 2, verse 26. Regarding a man named Simeon, who was a prophet, who received revelation from God, and who spoke for God. And it says in verse 26, and it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost, by God, that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And then God told him to go into the temple when Joseph and Mary brought little Jesus there to be dedicated at the temple. And after he saw him, in verse 29, Simeon said, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation. So he was told that he wouldn't see death until he had seen the Lord's Christ. Now he had seen the Lord's Christ, he was ready to depart in peace. So for Enoch to have been transferred from one place to another so that he would not see death, it doesn't give a lot of details. It could have been that God moved him so he wouldn't see somebody die, or it could have been that he moved him somewhere so that he would not be killed. Okay? One of the two. In either case, he did himself die eventually later on, because in Hebrews 11, verse 13, after mentioning Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham, it says in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises or the things that were promised to them, but having seen them afar off. So they all died. So Enoch did die. Whether or not he was moved at one point so that he would not see death, either see somebody die or be killed himself at some point, God moved him somewhere else. In either case, he still died eventually. Okay? But that's all I know about that. Now, going back to Hebrews 11:6, we're going to finish up here for the evening. Hebrews 11:6, we read about Abel, who was a prophet, who received information from God and by faith or by believing, offered a more excellent sacrifice than his brother Cain did. Okay? And by it, by believing, being dead, he yet speaketh. His example still speaks. Okay? And he is certainly still spoken of, because we're speaking about him right now. Verse 5 says, by faith Enoch, another prophet who believed God and did according to God's will, was translated or transferred that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated or transferred him. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God, that he walked with God. Okay? So both of them were prophets. Both of them had a good report. Both of them had a good report because they believed. They did what they did because they believed. They believed because they had words of God. They had words of God because they were seeking God's will. You see? They were both seeking God by seeking God's will. What does God want? What is pleasing to God? Okay? Without believing, it's impossible to please him. But again, Cain was obviously not interested in pleasing God. But Abel was, and Enoch was. And then next time we get together, we'll read about others that are mentioned in this chapter in Hebrews that did seek to please God, that did believe God, that did carry out his will. Even though they didn't receive the things promised during their lifetime, everyone will eventually, because it's not over yet. Because every one of them's going to get up again. We'll read about that too. But that's all for tonight. Thank you for joining in, and come back next week and we'll learn some more about how to diligently seek God. Okay?